The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, folks. So be away for a couple weeks. Class will resume on the 10th. And before then, there's still some spots for day long in Berkeley on Sangha. I think empathic connection and the refuge of spiritual friendship, or something like that, on December 6th. So you can register on insightretreatcenter.org if you're in the area. Happy to have you. Okay, this is, I think this is Dogen, but I'm not certain. But very famous, doesn't matter who says it, it's good. Before studying Zen, I saw mountains and rivers as rivers. When I had more intimate knowledge, I came to see mountains not as mountains, rivers not as rivers. But now that I've attained the substance, I again see mountains just as mountains and rivers just as rivers. Our path describes a kind of progression, maybe we could say, from deluded to weird to ordinary. A lot of ways you could chop up the path, but that might be one. So we begin the path with so much unquestioned. Our conditioning is our truth. Mountains are so inarguable. They're that kind of metaphor for stability and permanence. And our life initially on the path is like the mountain, just unquestioned. My life, my problems, my hopes, my life. And we're sort of unaware of how much we've assumed about our life, about the nature of happiness, how much we've assumed about who and what we are. A mountain is a mountain. A river is not a mountain. A river is a river. I want that. I am me. You are you. Life is life. And the Buddhist path is a kind of addition to our assumed life. And in the early phases, the Dharma never truly calls into question the foundations of our life. And so we tend not to ask the deep, dangerous questions that threaten the illusions we stand upon. And that's the first phase. And it might be many years. Then we begin to look more deeply, to interrogate the ways, as the Dhammapada says, mind precedes phenomena. Mountains are not mountains. We begin not with mountains, however, but with ourselves. As familiar as we are with mountains, we're all too familiar with ourselves. I was reading some kind of brain science meditation research and about the way that our brain distinguishes self-generated internal sensory experience from external experiences. And as it turns out, we're so used to most signals in our body that our mind, our brain kind of down regulates its responses to those signals, to those internal events. And we're afraid of the world, but not afraid of ourselves. In some sense, it should be the reverse. The Buddha might say it should be the reverse. Says Yoav Schweitzer, Stephen Fulder, other colleagues. They write, the human brain constructs a boundary between self and world by distinguishing self-generated sensory events from external ones. For events that are self-initiated, the brain attenuates its response, what's known as the sensory suppression effect. This effect is regarded as a proxy of the sense of agency, our feeling of being subjective agents controlling our actions and ensuing events in the world. In deep meditative states where the self-world boundary blurs, phenomenological reports indicate a reduced or absent sense of agency accompanied by neural changes. We're vigilant about the world, about the mountains. That's where the threat is. And very casual about our breath, for example. And meditation, in a sense, is the reversal of the sensory suppression effect. We, maybe it's just for pretend, but we assume samsara is safe and we enter our mind as if it's unknown land. We enter with high sensitivity. This is I believe what Suzuki Roshi means when he spoke about the beginner's mind or the soft readiness of mindfulness. And we get very still, and all the lurching and fidgeting and agitation comes to rest, all comes to rest. And we renounce so much, not because we should, but because everything but awareness is a hassle. And we see what does the world look like when our knowing is less and less entangled with wanting. And emptiness is expressed in many, many ways, necessarily poetic ways. Often hear not something like non-solidification, de-reification. And of course, it's not that we walk through the wall rather than the door. It's just that every perception is fluid, melty, run through with space. The perception of mountain is not what it used to be. This is the Zen tradition, Eikan Nangaku. To truly hear the songs of the rivers and mountains, to communicate and be intimate with the grasses and trees, to develop sincere, love-filled exchanges with all our relations. A maturing intimacy is called forth. For this, a deepening connection and grounding, supports our movement beyond the edge of what our minds have framed this life to be. Meeting life with the practice of going beyond, we polish ourselves into the spotless place, steadily dissolving into this unknowable source of being. We begin to hear the song and walk the path with increasing presence and awareness, becoming aware of its edges. As we follow the scent of the path's edgelessness, beyond the edges that define things, the path invites a letting go, the edges that define and separate it from the unknown. Here is where the mountain is no longer a mountain. This edgelessness is an empty spaciousness of no thingness. This is our weird phase. You know, you really have to watch your conduct at, say, a dinner party with civilians. Mountains are not mountains. And I remember feeling very kind of divorced from the world, not exactly alienated, just really not of the world, and felt like a kind of heightened period of I don't know, but of neuroplasticity. My brain felt very malleable. And then things stabilize, maybe we say reconstitute, but reconstitute in a freer way, in a way that we don't forget that process of recongealing, the process of melting. And for many practitioners, things kind of mellow out. Actually, I don't know how universal that is, but the samadhi is less energetically disorganizing. The insights are less dizzying. And part of the intensity of mountains are not mountains is that the gap between the ordinary solidification of self and these rarefied states on retreat or in the silence, is that gap is large. And so part of what's jarring, part of what's feels wild, is that the gap between the ordinary level of solidification and the meltiness. But then one's baseline changes, and so the kind of dips into more fluidity, not jarring in the same way. Say the baseline solidification is different. Shinzen Young says spiritual practice is a sequence of acclimatizations to a progressively less fixated, more attenuated sense of self. And there's some in the mountains just being mountains. I think fair to say there's some disillusionment along the way, sobriety about what the path does not do. Purity, in other words, is a primitive psychological need. Mountains are just mountains, rivers, just rivers, but one thing's very different. Love becomes very prominent. Love is the kind of face of emptiness. This is Ben Lerner, says the Hasidim tell a story about the world to come that says everything there will be just as it is here. Just as our room is now, so it will be in the world to come. Where our baby sleeps now, there too, it will sleep in the other world. And the clothes we wear in this world, those too, we will wear there. Everything will be as it is now, just a little different. Offer this for your consideration, and see you in December.